Sefer, we're on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. A few lines from where the lines get thicker. Okay, we talked about some of Shlomo's excesses with horses, with the money, with the women. So what happened was that I alluded to this at the end of the last class. That when he went looking for that diamond to cut the stone of the Beis HaMikdash, because you're not allowed to use metal to cut the stone, right? So it says, Rabbi Yossi Berchini Amar Ba'ut HaShoah Yorad Malach Benid Meked Mus Shlomo. See? Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph.
What?
Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Right? So the angel, which was able to take on any form, took the form of Shlomo. Okay. And he sat on Shlomo's throne. I'm the one who used to be king. I'm the real king. That's an imposter sitting on the throne. Isn't one of the X-Men able to look like anything they want? They can take on any form or something. So the Ashmedai is able to do that too. Okay. Okay.
That's why he invented chess, right? The Medrash says he invented chess, but he was kicked into India, and he had to prove his son.
Prove that he was wise.
He was wise.
That's the okay.
The Vayikra Tachumim, right?
It's a Gemara in Eruv.
That's also Medrash says in Medrash Rava.
That's a Gemara. Okay. All right. So that's where we learned that he says I used to be king. Okay, you see Melech, right? Okay, this is a story told in Perek HaNizokin, the Gemara you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. Right. So Rabbi Yossi, this is what happened to him because of his excesses, right? The Gemara is telling you a Musar that's in Plato's Republic. Excesses in a king will cost him his kingdom. And he may be able to give it over to his son, but they can't last long. Right? All right. I don't know. It seems to be working in North Korea, but they seem to be continuing to lord it over the people. All right. We have a Marin Le Malka Yosef Al Basilion Diday V'Teimar Ani Koheles V'Yumakin Osabakanu V'Vien Lufan of Ka'aros Grisin. Right. So. You know, when he would tell them this, I'm the real king. The guy who's sitting on the throne is an imposter. Take off his shoes and you'll see he has cloven feet. Right? So the people would respond, no, the king is sitting on his throne. Right? And no one believed Shlomo. He was beaten and they gave him grisin. Grisin is like, beans. They just gave him, he was reduced to poverty. Okay. So one thing he retained, though, right? Ba'usa Shah Omar Vizeha Yochelki. This was my chelek because of my excess. Right? All bad things that happen to leaders is because they tend to excess. They think things are coming to me, and that's what does them in. Right? Then now there are good psukim in Mishle that try to actually, teach a leader to refrain from this, but he obviously didn't take his own advice. He thought he was too smart for that. He said, "Ze hayochelki." What is that? What is his chelek? What did he leave? What did he retain? Istamarin chudra. Some say he managed to hold on to some kind of scepter. Right. Some kind of staff, or a cloak, or a belt. We'll see. Istamarin kanya. Istamarin Kusharte. Some say a scepter, some say a staff, some say a cloak or a belt, possibly a cup or a plate from the, from the king's palace. Right? Umika Targo. Right? So, what precipitated this harsh punishment? What was his kitrug? You know, we say haskategor. Right. What was the kitrug? What caused this Shlomo to come to this end? I'm Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. Yud shebiyarbe kitargo. the yud of yarbe. Lo yarbe lo nashim. Right? You see anything? Right? It says lo yarbe. He shall not amass too many of three things: horses, wives, money. Each one, the reason is given in the pasuk. Right?
Why is it the yud? It's the low that was the problem. Lo yarbe lo.
Yud shebi yarbe kitargo.
Take out the yud of yarbe.
He says. Look how he continues. He said, ani arbe. He says that the yud of lo yarbe, he changed it to ani arbe. Right? The king shall not, but I will, because, and look at the reason. The Gemara explains. But the Torah usually doesn't give reasons for to keep mitzvahs, but here it does. Don't have too many wives. I'll tell you why not, because they'll turn your heart astray. Okay. I won't let them turn my heart astray, so I'll have many wives. Okay. So, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Olo Sefer Mishneh Torah v'nishtateach lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Sefer Devarim picked itself up and said, look at what this king has done to me. So, Amalafan of Ribbono Olamim, Kasafta b'torasecha kol daitiki shabatla miktsasa batla kula v'ei shlomo mevakesh la'kor yud mimeni. Ribbono Shel Olam, when a daitiki is like a guarantee for a promissory note, so a guarantee that I will pay from this thing if I default on a loan or something like that. So it says the point of this Gemara is that removing one little yud from the Torah is may as well remove the whole Torah altogether. Now it's interesting. The Talmud Bavli does not have this cheshbon here. It's in the same Masechta, but at the end of the Talmud Bavli, where David begs God to take the story of Bathsheba outside of the Tanakh. He says, why do people have to read about it? I did it. Okay, I had lots of things I did aren't in the Tanakh. So do me a favor. Nikesi mi pesherav. Take it out of the Tanakh. So Hashem says, no, I couldn't, because I took a yud out of the Tanakh once from Sarai's name, and they wouldn't let me go, and I put it back in this week's parsha. Right? Hoshea became Yehoshua. So the yud from Sarai went to here. And two interesting, this is side tangents, if I may. That's why he's called Yehoshua bin Nun, the Chasam Sofer says, because he borrowed two dots from the ben, the e, to become in, bin, to put on the yud. You can ask on this, but what's interesting is that the Netziv was once asked to adjudicate a din Torah in a shul, where they added two rows to the front of the shul, and the guy who was originally sitting in the front row wanted to continue to move. He said, I had the front row before, I had the front row now. And I said, no, you stay in your seat. That's your row. You're putting two. There's nothing in our bylaws that says we can't add rows to the front. So he wanted to sue me with it because they were selling the front rows now for new. So anyway, he used this rise. So the Gemara there says that's the yud was appeased by saying, all right, listen, you were originally at the end of a great person. Now you're going to be at the beginning of a great person. So look how the Netziv is using Nagalata. He says, really? So the hay had a taina? The hay can say, God, it used to be at the beginning of Hoshea's name. Now you put someone else in front of me. It's not fair. I want compensation. So he said, no, hey, you're stuck where you are. So too, you stay in on the third row. Stay where you were before. It's amazing.
Rabbi, did the Rambam ever comment one way or the other about the anthropomorphizing of letters?
Not that I'm aware of. I think it's just, letters complaining to God. I think yes. it's all just like the chal complaining or being embarrassed. No, it's just, that's all it is. It's just a personification. That's all it is.
He went into Sarah's name.
So
well, that's what Yud got lost, and two Hays came in. Two Hays is Yud.
Abraham became Abraham. That's why my daughter's name ends in A-H.
We talked about that girls' names should probably have a Hay in it. We talked about that. We talked about the Akaros. Okay, so he says that. So the point is that Shlomo by by saying ani arbe, and that it's only someone else who's not as smart as you who's told lo yarbe. You've outsmarted the Torah. You start to chip away at the Torah one letter, and that's the beginning of it. So let's look. There is an opinion in the Talmud that the last eight pesukim in the Torah were written by someone other than Moshe.
Shubanun.
So if Ibn Ezra says that the last 12 pesukim were written by someone else, and then he chips away another four and elsewhere, and then the five in the beginning of Dvarim, before you know it, Ibn Ezra's up to about 30. And all right, so you know, now I know why the Rambam says just stick it at zero. We should paskin like the opinion of Rav Shimon that Moshe wrote the whole thing, because once you, I think going from zero to eight is a bigger trespass than going from eight to 30. It's just that one's a Tana and one's a Rishon. But the Argamar is just saying, you know, Shlomo, you're chipping away.
Is there any place where there is a definitive Torah, unless you're from a Bible college, because they use it and take successive repetitive steps?
Yeah, I know.
And I heard that if it has two vavs in it, there's certain things that don't disqualify a Torah.
Right, so the answer is because the Gemara in Megillah says, Anan lo bekiyin bechaseros v'yaseros. We're not experts as far as the vavs, you know, where Yaakov is supposed to have a vav in it. Yeah.
Okay. That's why they use their...
So that's why they can throw off the whole system.
Yaakov's
got five and Eliyahu...
Six.
I think it's Yaakov, and there's an Aaron also. That's part of the Cheshbon, but something like that. Yeah. Oh. Oh, no, it's five or six. Yeah. Okay, Amalek HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shlomo. So Hashem told this judgment of Hashem, and Hashem tells him, 1,000 like him will be bottled, but not a yud of Tanakh. I'd rather get rid of 1,000 like you than get rid of a yud of Tanakh. Right? The Gemara, this seems like a polemic, because it must be even back at this time. There were engagements with people. How do you know this is what Yeshayahu said? And they were making emendations and changes. And right, Rabbi Meir's Torah, he was very makbid on. He talked about changes that others had. And plus, and this is really a serious problem. I mean, a lot of people have written about it. The Gemara in Kiddushin gives us a glimpse of how many pesukim are in the Torah, how many pesukim are in Tehillim, how many pesukim are in Divrei Yamim, and certain other mesoros. What's the middle letter of the Torah? What's the middle word of the Torah? What's the middle pasuk of the Torah? Not one of these things is even remotely close to what's written in our Torahs. Not even remotely. I mean, in Divrei Yamim, the thousands of pesukim off. In Tehillim, the thousands of pesukim off. Or in the Torah, the 43 pesukim off. But there are ingenious approaches to resolve this issue. The Minchas Shai, who was the greatest of the Masoretes, he writes in his on the middle pasuk, Rosh Mavayikra Cheskes, he goes, Tishbi Atar, it's, you know, when Elio comes, he'll give us an answer.
If in Ezra's time already, they were unsure of the text of the Torah.
Elio comes,
yeah. So,
the answer is, we go by our halachic processes to determine what the correct version of the Torah is, which is Rov. Right, that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says he even gives you the variant texts. The Sefer tells us the variant texts that he was working with, and he went with the majority. Is it possible that the minority was correct? Of course it is. But we go after majority. When some milk falls in my cholent and I eat the whole cholent, of course I eat milk and meat. But in a proportion that doesn't violate the Torah. You know what I'm saying? So here's what I would say. We talked about this a little bit. I heard over Shavuos, some people gave shir, is that there's a difference between believing in something and believing that. No, I believe in God. I don't believe in Yetzias Mitzrayim. I believe that Yetzias Mitzrayim happened, because my father told me. I don't believe in it the same way I believe that this is a watch. Because one, I have empirical data that I'm sensing, and one, I'm accepting as a tradition, as a dogma, as faith. And if I may, I'm just because I think that's what's really going on here in the Gemara when it says 1,000 of you should be bottled, but I'm not going to bottle a yud of the Tanakh. I mean, there's so many obvious corrections that ought to be made in the Torah. There's a concept called Yeshayim LaMesora that is predicated on two assumptions, that the Torah is divine and that a divine document ought to be perfect, and some observable facts. There's no vocalization in the Torah, and there are hundreds and hundreds of spelling inconsistencies in the Torah. The word toldos is spelled four different ways in the Torah. What is this? Catcher in the Rye? What is this? Right? Because in Catcher in the Rye, there are about 10,000 spelling mistakes in the book. Right? And it's done on purpose. Right? So the answer is that we come to know things in different ways. And there's no way that I need to know that the Torah is actually the word that Moshe gave from Har Sinai the way I know certain other things. The reason why I know the Torah is correct is a chazaka. It's a presumption of correctness. Right? There are all kinds of very clever emendations we can make. There's a presumption. I'll give it just a quick example. It's a Gemara in Baba Basra. Gemara says, how do we presume that the person who's living in the house is the owner of the house? The answer is, you see, he goes out with a lawnmower, he puts up a fence, he does things that owners do, and he lives there a certain amount of time without being contested. He doesn't have to show a document to prove he's the owner. Same thing if you see a man or and a woman with a little child in between them, and the child trips and then one of them comes and picks him up and hugs him, there's a presumption that those are parents. Right? The Gemara actually tells us a story about a woman who moved into a neighborhood with a young child, and 20 years later she was found to have slept with the child. And they said there's a chazaka that she's the mother, and she's guilty of the death penalty. By a chazaka. We have no proof. She can say, no, I'm not the mother. I was the babysitter or something. I was the nurse. You know, so we do things on presumptions. We have to live on presumptions. Every one of you has a cheskas kasher. So you invite me to your house, I'm coming to eat. Now, if a presumption is weakened by a reisa, then I start to have doubts. So far, the Torah has stood very, very firmly and very strongly for us. And generations have studied it and continue to study it. What are the reisas? Abraham Geiger? Archaeology? Right? Abiraba, the Dead Sea Scrolls is and things in archaeology are turning out to be great proofs of Torah. Anyway, here's the example the Gemara gives, that if you want to assume ownership of a person who's living in a house, you can accept testimony from numerous groups of people. I saw him for a week, I saw him for 100 different sets of witnesses who attest the fact that that's the owner of the house. Not because of any document or that they saw him buy it, but they saw him living there. Now, Gemara gives another case of determining that a child is old enough to show the signs of maturity. That's two hairs. So, we saw two hairs on the stomach. He's 13. He can make kiddush. He can read the shofar. He can read the Megillah. But the Gemara says that if one person sees one, if, I'm sorry, two people see one hair over here, and two people see one hair over there, right? That's not enough. It has to be two people see the both together, right? So the Gemara just says, because when it comes to assuming a child is old enough to fulfill obligations of others, we can't rely on presumptions. Most of the things a 13-year-old boy does today is drabonos. So we allow presumptions for drabonos. He can lame, he shouldn't say parsha zachor, unless we know he has shtei saros. Probably see it on his face, maybe. Right? He shouldn't blow shofar until we see shtei saros.
Briskers are marked for Megillah also.
Yeah, okay. I know Rabbi Bleichel on the east side won't do have a bar mitzvah in his shul unless he determines this.
Yeah, of course, it's Rav Chaim Brisco.
Yeah, you just said Brisco, yeah.
Yeah, it's Rav Chaim.
Okay, right there. Let's go on. So I'd rather lose 1,000 like you than lose a yud. Yehuna v'shem Ravacha, yud shenokal kodesh baruch hu me'imenu sara, here goes at the end of the Masechet I mentioned, nitan chetzio al sara v'chetzio al Avram. There you go, he divided the yud into two hays. See it? Okay, we thought this was some sulfur, it's a gemara. And he divided the yud into two hays, one for Sarah, one for Avram. So the Vilna Gaon says that this is the hay of not of Hashem's name, the hay of fertility. Right? Hay usually denotes femininity in Hebrew. Okay. Tani Rabbi Shaya, Allah yud v'nishtateach lifnei Kodesh Baruch Hu v'amar ribono olamim. Akartani mina tzadeka says those. You took me out of such a tzadeka. Some Allah Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is no get to our this week's parasha. Tzelecha l'shoavar ha'yisa natun b'shem nekeva u'v'sof teva You see, notice before I sort of cleaned this up a little to be more politically correct. I just mentioned the end and the beginning. You know, right? Hashem is telling the Yud, you know, before you were in the woman, now you're going to be in a man. Right? My apologies. But the way I explained it is that it appears in the Bavli is that before you were at the end of a name. Now you're going to be at the beginning of a name. Right? Okay, so the Yud was duly appeased. Okay. Tichsiv ha'yikra Moshe lahoshea bin Nun Yehoshua. That's why he's bin Nun. Okay. Okay, v'chosiv sefer Torah lishma. Let's continue, please. And he should also write a sefer Torah lishma. What is this lashon lishma? Just say he has to write a sefer Torah. Because every Jew has to write a sefer Torah. The king has to have two.
Shmo here is for his own name, not for another Shem Shmo.
And not for his father. You know, king gives his inheritance to his child. No, right?
Usually when you say by secretary, Ksivu Lishmo, it means Lishmo Lishem Kedusha.
Here is Lishmo,
it's for his own name.
Yeah, his use. And his son has to make one for him, too. Okay? That's what he's saying. You can't use it for the Shelo Yehei Neos Lo B'Shel Aviv Lo B'Shel Rabba. He shouldn't rely on the use of his father's nor of his rebbe's. Okay? Azora. Some nuschaos of the Sifrei from which this comes is Sefer Ezra. Tikkun Ezra. But he means Misefer Azora. Al pi beis din shel shivim be'echod. What is Sefer Azora? Sefer Azora. So, Sefer Azora has its sources in last week's parsha on the pasuk v'yafutzu oyvecha v'yanusu misanecha mipanecha. It's a tangent to that, to how can God have enemies, and it gets off into a bit of a tangent that ends us up on the topic of Tikkun Sofrim. And then there is a sefrei that starts with the words Gimel Sfarim Nimtzu Ba'Azora. When Ezra came back to revitalize the Klal Yisrael religiously, they found three Torahs in the Azora, Sefer Azora. That's not the Sefer Azara. Those are three. From those three, he made the Sefer Azara. Now, this is going to be the Ur text, the text from which all other texts shall be taken. The problem is, as Radak points out, if I may just use the board, Radak points out that he doubts the number. He says, I can't believe that in all of Israel, only three Torahs remained. He said, I'd rather take an arbitrary number like 300. Because if there are three Torahs, let's call them Torah Aleph, Torah Beis, and Torah Gimel, right? And what Ezra was doing is he had three people call out every word starting from Bereshis. It was, okay, Aleph, Bereshis, Bereshis, okay, Bereshis. Very Bereshis. Next word, Barah, Barah, okay, Barah. And at some point, he ran into some discrepancies. And the Sifrei actually tells us the discrepancies. This is the significance. I told you this before. So if you had a discrepancy, what was one? It says, Atzile, Atzile, Zatute. I get back to that, I don't know. But he says, okay, we'll write Atzile in our new Torah. Okay? All right. So now... Okay. So now you can picture that what happens if in this pasuk happens to be Shmos. You can see that if, let's say, he has this kind of cheshbon, right? Right, so now he's going to follow. Right, he knocked out this one. So
possibly one of the original three.
Right, so now what happens if this happens? You see what happens? See, there's a simple eventuality to creating a third Sefer Torah that's unlike a fourth Sefer Torah that's unlike any of the three he's working with. Follow what I'm saying?
Yep.
It only takes one word to make something puzzle. Or even possibly the eventuality, since you have hundreds of thousands of words, the possible eventuality that all three say something different. If you want to twice, I don't know. So he says, he just says, I don't think 300 is a likely number. Let's see, so he makes it like an arbitrary number. He says, let's deal with 300 and imagine the following. In the vast majority of these 305,000 or so psukim in the Tanakh, in the Torah, they're all the same. Okay, it's fine. They're all the same. Nothing to worry about. But in some cases, when there were discrepancies, the discrepancy often pointed to human error. Even in printing, you sometimes see printing mistakes, right? So when human error was at hand, so okay, Zatute was human error. Someone just went out to lunch, came back and wrote the wrong word. But there were some times where, and if that happened, it showed up very, very few times. Maybe just once. Sometimes the one word showed up 140 times, and another word showed up 160 times. I can't discount that 140 just like that. So what is an ingenious approach to explaining a particular Masoretic phenomenon?
Kriyuksiv,
yes. It happens not to be like the Gemara, because the Gemara says that Kriyuksiv halachon moshe misinai in the Gemara Nedarim. But he explains Kriyuksiv. He says that in Kriyuksiv, and he says that, and I will always explain both of them. He says because both were you know traditional. They're both in there, but one is the correct one. It's very interesting.
And when a sofer writes the Torah, they don't do it by memory. They always read a part and then they go and write it.
Even the mezuzah they're supposed to.
Seriously?
Even the mezuzah they're supposed to. Yeah. Now they have computer programs that go to.
That check it?
They check it, yeah, yeah. And
I remember the guy called me up from Princeton, I did, with that question, is it possible to check a sefer Torah? I said, yeah. It's very possible. It's not easy. And they wrote it 2-3 years later. They had the program.
The programs are doing. So
we had here checked.
Okay. All right. So that's how the Radak explains the phenomenon in Kriyuksiv. Okay. So it says Yotze lemelchama v'hi imo shnemar b'hiso imo v'karabo kol yemei chayav. When he goes out to war, the Torah is with him. It says v'yisa imo, that's going on the word Torah, because bo means read from the sefer, because it starts off in plural, in feminine, it goes to masculine. Kol yemei chayav. V'arei dvorim kavachomer, u'ma im melech Yisrael sheya asuk b'tzorche Yisrael, nomar bo v'kara bo kol yemei chayav, ha-hetyo dalachas kama v'chama. A king who's supposed to be so busy with Klal Yisrael, remember the first parak in Brachas, he talks about all the things that David the Melech was doing, right? I mean, but still certainly has public works to worry about, and so surely someone who doesn't have what the king has to worry about should be reading Torah every day. Interesting, the Ramban bounces off of his Gemara to say, okay, I have another Kavachomer. Because the Ramban, and the Rambam also, by the way, humility was a crucial midah, characteristic. So crucial for them to inculcate humility. And the Ramban says, how is it that if we feel that in Pirkei Avos, in Mishlei, in the Talmud, humility is so important, why is there no pasuk in the Torah that teaches us to be humble? It's just the Torah does glorify in Moshe's humility, more humble than any man. But why isn't there any mitzvah? The Torah tells us all about certain feelings we're supposed to have, especially in Parshas Kedoshim, but no mitzvah on humility. So the Ramban says, of course there is. The king is told, don't amass too much wealth because then you will raise your heart above your brethren, and I don't want you to do that. So we read between the lines. That means the king is told to be humble. So how much more so everyone else? There's some tachsisei malchus, pompous aspects of kingship that the king is not allowed to let go of. And still he's supposed to be humble.
That sort of doesn't really sound right, though. To say that the Torah comparing is one thing, we don't have the same obligations, you should learn more Torah. To tell a king to be humble, he needs a reminder to be humble because he's living like a king. Be humble. He's humble anyway.
It's interesting because you can counter and say, listen, a king has a restriction on the amount of wives. A hetyot doesn't. You can afford to give them all the ksuva, and it's called pay them all.
There's a reason for that.
You can have 50 wives, you know. Right? Okay. Kiyotivo, Noma be Yoshua, be Isa by Yom Balaila. Balotvorm Kavachomer. Yoshua was told, learn Torah day and night. Kavachomer. Uma im Yoshua Shaosik Bitzorchi Yisrael, Noma Bobi Isa by Yom Balaila, had your Lokol Shekin. If Yoshua, who was busy with prosecuting the Milchemes Mitzvah and preparing Klal Yisrael for their time in Israel, and even he is told to be involved in Torah day and night. Right? How much more so the rest of us? Melech Yisrael ein rochvin al suso ein yoshvin al nislo ein mishtamshin lo b'kisro v'lo b'sharvito v'lo b'echad mikol mishamshov. Okay, we may not ride on the king's horse. Remember, we talked about Haman last week, and that would, you know, if this is a rule in Israel, Mistam, it's a rule in other countries as well. Right? The king's stuff is just for the king, right? Okay, so.
Mine has a different gear,
so
it says Kiso.
Yeah, Kiso, that's why I said Kiso, yeah. Can't sit in this chair. Now, some of these things, you know, that the Torah says about your parents also, you shouldn't sit in their chair, or you should. But the parent is allowed to be mocha on these things. The parent can has the right of the refusal of their kavod and say you can sit there. But the king shouldn't. Right? You shouldn't wear his crown, you shouldn't hold his scepter, and any other of his personal effects. Ukishemes kula nisrafin lefanav, shneimar b'shalom tamus uvemisraf ukemisrafos avosecha yisrafulach. So, is an interesting thing is that you know when a king died, they would burn his saddle, his, you know, like his, these personal things. They would bury his Torah because his son is not supposed to use it. So here is an interesting thing, because in a lot of places in Malachim it talks about this burning that they would do for a king. And I'd just like to conclude with a fascinating Targum Yonasan. When Shaul HaMelech was killed by the Philistines, apparently they captured him dead. Whether he killed himself or whether that Nara Maliki in the beginning of Shmuel Beis killed him, but they found him dead. You could just picture what they would have done to him alive. But they stripped him and they beheaded him. And they hung his corpse in the center of town. Right? And it says that sometime later, some very courageous men from Yavesh Gilad, and if you look at the map, Yavesh Gilad is just north of the Dead Sea, in Beit Shan, where they were hanging. It's quite north. You know, you've been to Beit Shan? They have a big arena there, a very famous tourist site.
It's Tamara's mailing address.
Oh, yeah, Beit Shan?
Beit Shan.
Really? Huh. So you know it's pretty far from the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
It's way up north. So for them to bring the corpses back home and to go home was even further south. Home, we know where Shaul's home was. It's right near the central bus station in Yerushalayim. It's called Givat Shaul. Right? So to take the bodies all the way down, it says they burnt the bodies. Burnt the bodies and brought the bones back with them. The bodies were starting to decompose. It was very, very, it was very sick. And you can get very, you know.
Shikoda. It's called the Shikoda.
Right, so that's the pasuk shot. What's interesting is that in the parallel pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, it says they made a burning for him. What burning could they do? They didn't have any of the stuff there. But that's what it says. They made a burning for him. They made misrafos.
I think I saw Chufar of Ashri had such a shayla in the World War II. There was somebody running away with the Sefer Torah, and they saw that they were going to be captured, and they figured if they'll be captured with the Sefer Torah, it'll be a bazillion safer, and there was a bridge there, so they ran over a bridge and threw it in the river. Huh. And then afterwards they came to ask, which is the Shaila, if they have to do tshuva for a bazillion safer. Huh. And I think, if I remember correctly, he answered from this, that it was sometimes...
Just to burn it.
That was a bigger derech eretz. Rather than to bring a rotting body.
So bury, you know, there's a Mishnah in Tamura about burying and burning, you know, so... It's interesting because the halacha says that if a Jewish heretic writes a Torah, you should burn it. Yeah. If a Gentile writes a Torah, you should bury it. So, all right. So what's interesting is that the Targum Yonasan to the Psukim in Shmuel, this is an interesting phenomenon. There's a book on Targum Yonasan, they said, that has a chapter on this topic. That when Targum Yonasan doesn't like something that appears in Nevi'im, if there's a parallel pasuk in Divrei Hayamim that reads it differently, he'll give the Targum to the Divrei Hayamim pasuk. Happens quite often. I'm saying it's an exact targum yonis, targum to the divrayamim, because divrayamim is sort of cleansed. No, we don't want to burn people, so they made a burning for him. But and the targum yonis is v'yisrefu osam betz masmu. So they said they burned them and they took the bones up. So it's clear what they did. But all right, just putting it out there. Okay, we're going to start continuing with Hashem. Ein ro'in oso arom below. There's just a few more things about that.